Are you looking for a Christ-centered, cross-focused church? Check out the new Find a Church page at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Find a Church. Are you tired of worship that's more about self-help than the Savior, the Christian rather than the Christ, and the Christ in you instead of Christ for you? It's not about you, it's about Jesus for you. Find a church near you, issuesetc.org. Click Find a Church.
It's the only way I made it through prison. It's the only way I can live life. It's having faith and believing in the higher power, believing in God.
Get a little impatient with those who say, if the Lutherans vote to adopt the recommendations before them, they're choosing to suddenly become another declining U.S. mainline denomination. Wake up call from the presiding bishop, we already are.
Congregations who wish to call a minister who is in a committed, lifelong, same-gender relationship to be their pastor, they would be able to do that.
Denominations who go down this path are departing from the Christian faith.
Thank you for providing theology for clerical collar, white collar, and blue collar.
We cannot fault the Christian community, the Christian church, for being consistent. The majority of Christians, especially in America, being consistent in its message about sexual abstinence before marriage. We cannot fault them for that. The message of abstinence is not only a biblical message, it is also a necessary message. Even if we weren't drawing from biblical sources to teach this to our young children before marriage, save yourself. Before marriage, wait. It would still be good advice. It would be good advice purely based upon what we know early sexual experience leads to, what it leads to later in life. So why are young people, Christian young people, Christian singles, finding it so difficult with every passing year as they grow older and older to abstain? We're going to answer that question, and we're going to talk a little bit about early marriage, not a popular subject. Seems kind of foolish, doesn't it? Marry early? We're going to talk about early marriage with Dr. Mark Regnerus here during the first few segments of this hour of Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're coming to you live this Thursday afternoon. It's the 20th of August. Now, I know you have an opinion about early marriage. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address is talkback at issuesetc.org, or you can Twitter us at issuesetc, at issuesetc. After our conversation about early marriage, we'll spend the last 15 minutes talking to Dr. Robert Benny about the Churchwide Assembly of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. Dr. Benny is a delegate to the ELCA Churchwide Assembly. They're taking decisions today on human sexuality. Dr. Mark Regnerus is Associate Professor of Sociology at the University of Texas in Austin. He's author of the book Forbidden Fruit, Sex and Religion in the Lives of American Teenagers, and he's also written the latest cover story for Christianity Today magazine titled The Case for Early Marriage. Dr. Regnerus, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thanks, Todd.
Why are Christian singles, for lack of a better word, finding it so difficult to heed the church's advice to abstain?
That's a good question. I wish I had a better answer for it. I sort of map the trends that are going on out in the wider community and also in the evangelical community. And it looks like we're not. And part of that, I think, has to do with the age at which we're marrying. I mean, we're marrying later, on average, about 5 years later than we did as recently as 1970. So some of this sort of lack of abstinence may just be a function of, we used to marry earlier, so we didn't notice it so much. So I think some of that has to do with our marital practices. At the same time, you know, it's obvious that we're being bombarded with messages about sex, positive messages, you know, pro-sex, more than we used to be. So I think it's this combination of things.
Well, you say that the church has made much ado about sex and has, in other ways, become quite lax in a kind of a common sense understanding of the place of marriage.
Right.
What do you mean?
In my observations, and when I wrote the book on religion and sex and among teenagers, I just kept hearing this discourse among evangelicals about abstinence, virginity pledges, all the sort of, we were coming up with new ways to get kids to keep their hands off each other. And at the same time, while I respect that, I just wasn't hearing a marriage message from the church, not for teenagers, but I wasn't hearing it for young adults either. It seemed like we were, you know, we were staying biblical about sex, but we were sort of losing our grounding in marriage, and we were starting to say the same message that people outside the church were, which is wait to get married. It's a big deal. Don't take it lightly. You better, you know, have a career as a backup. We kept delivering this sort of what I thought was a kind of a bad message about marriage, that, you know, we can't trust it.
Well, someone might say, look, the Bible doesn't specify an age for marriage.
Sure.
So right. where do we get off saying early or late or any of those
right.
kind of things? How do you respond?
Well, I mean, until probably 50 or 100 years ago, the question wouldn't even arisen, because marriage had been long required both socially and economically, right? So we wouldn't even be wondering about, when would I like to get married? When would be a good time to get married? How much do I want to do in my 20s? Because it just wasn't economically feasible for men or women. And now we, you know, I talk about in the article that we're really living in good times economically. You might think I have a hole in my head, not paying attention to a recession, but compared to times past, we have lots of educational opportunities, and we're free to reinvent ourselves and start new careers and things like that. And so we have so much more freedom around the subject of when should I get married than people ever did. So the question probably wouldn't have made sense to a community 2,000 years ago.
Okay, you have some tremendous insights onto how our thinking on marriage, our teaching on marriage, and all these things have changed from a right. biblical understanding, and it helps explain why many Christians have simply unconsciously bought into the concept that we need to finish college, we need to get a good, secure
right.
job, and then we need to find Mr. or Mrs. Right and just keep
right.
looking until we do.
Yeah, for all the talk about biblical marriage, I don't know where those things came from, because those are sort of Western romanticized ideals. They're not necessarily bad, but I talk about, you know, they really don't have any faithfulness to the institution. You know, they may lead you to fall in love with somebody, and they may lead you to fall in love with somebody else. So they don't keep us married. Romance is a good thing in general. But you know, if we're going to talk about biblical ethics about marriage, I'm not sure if I would start with sort of the romantic or the pragmatic.
You say that in many sectors of Christian teaching, marriage teaching has become, you say, a nebulous hodgepodge of pragmatic norms and romantic
right.
imperatives, few of
right.
which resemble anything biblical.
Right. Yeah, that's what we. If you review what you tell your children or what your parents told you, I can't really remember what was distinctively Christian about advice that people are getting about marriage now. And then I listen into the sort of the feedback that this article is getting. And I'm pleased to see that some people are saying, yeah, I wonder why I've been telling my kids this, or I wonder why I've been nervous about my 22-year-old daughter falling in love. We really have sort of acquired this consumption orientation to marriage rather than a productive orientation. I mean, we think first of that each of us is a self, right? And that two selves will find each other, or God will bring them together in a 20th century way, 21st century way, and then we're going to fall in love and get married. But at the bottom of that still is the idea that the self is the fundamental unit of analysis, right? And I would hazard a guess that marriage is more important in the mind of God than the self, especially when we've entered marriage. We tend to think of marriage as it exists as long as we want it to, right? So sometimes I become very Catholic about marriage. Like, no, it doesn't exist as long as you want it to. It will always exist. So I think some of our a lot of our norms in the church have nothing distinctively religious about them.
When we come back, maybe it's also that we have confused the basic Christian message, the Christian life, the actual good news that Christianity is, the forgiveness of sins, life, and salvation, with the American dream, with having, if not it all, at least your piece of the pie that's out there. And of course, marriage is part of that, but it's not necessary for that either. You can have it all without marriage. I mean, how else do we explain the fact that not only are kids voluntarily delaying marriage, they consider it ridiculous, foolhardy to do anything otherwise. And then when they finally do meet someone, Mr. or Mrs. Right, marriage is sometimes, even by Christians, considered an option. We're talking with Dr. Mark Rignaris about early marriage, Thursday afternoon, August the 20th, coming to you live. I want to hear from you. I know that you've got an opinion on early marriage, and I want to hear it. You can Twitter us at IssuesETC, at IssuesETC. You can give us a call, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE, or email us, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. Dr. Mark Rignaris is Associate Professor of Sociology at the University of Texas in Austin. He's author of the book Forbidden Fruit, Sex and Religion in the Lives of American Teenagers, and he's also written the cover story for the latest issue of Christianity Today magazine titled The Case for Early Marriage. 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-MYIE, talkback@issuesetc.org, or Twitter us at IssuesETC. At IssuesETC. By the way, you can read this article, The Case for Early Marriage, under the on-demand page of our website, IssuesETC.org. I'm Todd Wilkin. We'll be right back with more on early marriage.
A new way to stay connected to Issues Etc. Check out our page on Facebook. Network with fellow Issues Etc. junkies. Sign up to become a fan, and we'll send you updates on future topics and guests. You'll even find photos of in-studio guests, Todd drinking gelato, and highlights from our one-year anniversary open house. You'll discover that Todd, Jeff, and Craig really do have faces for radio on Facebook. Issues Etc. on Facebook. Another way to stay connected to Issues Etc. Facebook.com/IssuesETC.
Would you like to support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a regular, monthly, tax-deductible gift? We've made it easy for you to donate using automatic withdrawal. Simply fill out and mail the automatic billing authorization form under the donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. No more writing monthly checks or making monthly PayPal contributions. issuesetc.org. Click donate and fill out and mail the automatic withdrawal form. Thanks for your support.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Here's your chance to win a $100 gift certificate to Concordia Publishing House. Email 10 friends the latest Issues Etc. YouTube video, and we'll register you to win a gift certificate from Concordia Publishing House. We'll announce the winner on August 28th. Just go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org, copy and paste the video's embed code into an email, send it to 10 friends, relatives, or fellow parishioners. Be sure to send a carbon of your email with your name and address to talkback@issuesetc.org. Tell 10 friends about Issues Etc. and tune in on Friday, August the 28th to find out if you're the winner of a $100 gift certificate to Concordia Publishing House. Go to issuesetc.org, click promote, and send the Issues Etc. YouTube video to your friends. Talking about early marriage. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Mark Rignaris is our guest. Kathy's on the line from St. Charles, Missouri. Hi, Kathy.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, this topic I find real important. And I have a 20-year-old who is engaged, and he has a full-time job. And we've encouraged them through listening to you've done this topic before, right?
Yeah, I think we've bumped up against it a couple times.
Mm-hmm. And I had them listen to a program that you had done about this before, and I wanted to see their response. I've encouraged my son, if he, you know, is in love and he wants to get married and he thinks he can provide, they should get married. You know, her mother doesn't want her to get married until she gets her college education and this type of thing. But I do think that it's something that really needs to be looked at because, you know, we want this good foundation for families, and it's much harder to have a good foundation if you get so many things in front of the foundation that you forget about the foundation. You know, you put other goals and things that are important in front, and maybe it's suggested by parents in our society, but so many times too you see kids wanting more than what their parents had. Is it almost coveting? What is the deal with these kids and how much they want to have to get started? They seem to have so much more than people in the past.
Well, Kathy, thank you very much, and thanks for listening in St. Charles. Dr. Rigneris?
Yeah, Kathy brings up a good point, and she's putting the emphasis in the right place about building a foundation for marriage, that one that'll endure and one that sort of isn't hinging on whether her son and maybe future daughter-in-law won't accumulate all these toys. One of the things I talked about is that we expect our kids who marry to be sort of economically on their own, but that's sort of a moving target these days. I mean, what does it mean to be on your own, and what kind of a standard of living are we asking of them? And then we might complain about, you know, kids these days doing this, but, you know, they're looking at us. And so it's the adult population out there, I mean, the older adult population, that sort of sets the bar for these things. And so I think some degree of economic activity is a very good thing, or educational activity. But we as parents can also sort of lend a hand where possible some of the time. So it sounds like Kathy's son, though, has his head screwed on right.
This email comes from Carrie in Minnesota, writing, "My two brothers and I all married by late teens or early 20s, and we're all still married, 33 years, 25 years, and 21 years, respectively. It all depends on how you look at marriage and when you enter with an attitude that you will work through the difficulties and realize there's both good times and bad. Remember the words, for better or for worse." Your thoughts there on Carrie's observation?
Yeah, that's I applaud her and her siblings. That's fantastic. I do think that We don't do a good enough job of teaching our children about all the work that a marriage entails and how to actually accomplish that. I know some of the students that I've talked with here at UT, they haven't seen marriages work. And so we think, oh, well, you could accomplish it. But they have no story of success to look at. And so, you know, I get depressed on their behalf because they haven't figured it out, and it doesn't come sort of self-obvious to people. One of the things I pointed out in the article is that we talk about home economics as if this is sort of a feminine thing or something that's silly and outdated in the 1950s. Like, home economics, like the way to make a relationship work and a household run is both pertinent for men and for women, and it is not self-obvious.
All right, let's talk a little bit about what is to be done. You say that making the abstinence message more strident or even stronger is not necessarily the solution here.
Yeah, I think it's pretty strong right now, and we've got various and sundry programs, especially with teenagers, to try to make it work. And I'm a social scientist. I know the national data, both inside the church and outside the church. And I'm not seeing a lot of payoff for making that message more intense. And so my message wasn't, the article wasn't intended to either affirm or undermine the current abstinence messaging and culture, but to say, hey, marriage is when it works well, and sometimes even when it doesn't, is a very good institution, and why aren't we talking about that, right? So I get students who are bombarded with abstinence messages, but when they think, well, maybe I would like to get married at 20 or 21, their peers just and sometimes their parents just start to howl. I just think that's very unfortunate.
Well, here's the story from my own experience, if I remember it correctly. And I may be misremembering, but I remember making the phone call where I told my mom and dad that I was engaged. And I think I was probably a junior in college. Uh-huh. My wife was a sophomore, but we weren't planning on getting married until she graduated. We wanted a long engagement. We had one. Uh-huh. And I was going to complete my first year of seminary. And then we get married after she graduated my first year of seminary. My mom didn't come out and say it on the phone, but I got the strong vibe. She thought we were too young.
Uh-huh.
And and then I think my dad gently reminded her that they were when they got married, she was a freshman. He was a sophomore in college.
Right.
And I've seen the pictures. They lived humbly, but they were a happy married couple, and they've passed 50 years. And I figured at the time, if they can do it, I can do it too. What are your
right.
thoughts there?
Well, some of that may just sort of be standard maternal and paternal anxieties. And we would probably do the same thing with our children. And it's a good thing that your father is there to have reassured your mother. One of the questions it raises is, you know, is each subsequent generation in the last several seemingly less mature than the generation before it? I don't have an answer to that question. One of the things I asserted in an article is that there's no reason why this generation can't be mature. There's no reason why a 20 and 22-year-old 23-year-old cannot get married to someone else and stay married. That immaturity is not fatal to a marriage. In fact, you know, I'm not sure how one knows what a marriage is like until one enters it. So everybody, even at 40 or 50, has a degree of immaturity about us.
In fact, you even say your phrase, spouses learn marriage.
Yeah,
what do you mean
right.
by that?
Right. Being a sociologist, it just feels to me, and I shouldn't say it feels it, looking at human behavior, all manner is sort of there's a lot of mimicking going. We learn behavior from other people. We learn religious behavior from our parents, and we'll make it our own eventually. We learn sports. We learn education. So much of life, and including marriage, including sexual intercourse, is learned behavior. It doesn't come natural. We have to learn it, and so that's why I emphasize the sort of intergenerational engagement on this subject, because what often happens is there's sort of a stand back and watch and see if our children can succeed or not, and you know, marriage becomes some sort of a competition. You know, are they going to make it? Well, let's see. And I think that's not a helpful attitude towards marriage.
Here's an email from Rachel in St. Louis. She says, thank you. The church loses all credibility, in her humble opinion, when they yell about homosexuals in lesser amounts on adultery and pornography, but look the other way when couples are living together, cohabitation. Pastors need to realize that fornication is going on in their youth groups. There is a lot of denial, and then they don't know what to say. Many of us were not virgins when we married,
right.
but we want better for our kids.
Right. I appreciate her frankness, and my approaches to this subject is persistently trying to be honest and saying, you know, these things are happening. I'm watching these trends occur. I don't want to sweep anything under the carpet. And so I appreciate her disinterest in doing the same thing. You know, we don't want to be blind to what we don't want to see, but see exactly what we are looking for.
With only about 30 seconds here, Paul in Milwaukee inquires via email, what's the guest's definition of early or late marriage? Does he have
an
age
question.
In mind?
Yep, I do. I don't recommend teen marriage. By the statistics, teen marriages tend to fail a lot more readily and quickly than do anything that happens after age, you know, after 19, 20 to 23, and 20 to 25 is not significantly less are not significantly more prone to divorce than marrying at 25 to 30. Now, that is a different story than marital happiness. Marital happiness, it tends to be right in the sort of mid-20s where is sort of the best shot at that. But, you know, we're talking about demographers' projections here, when in reality there are all these sort of human factors involved. So basically 20 and up is what I think is generally fine.
All right, folks, what do you think? Should Christians encourage earlier marriage? Are we leading our children into temptation by asking that they put off marriage until they've graduated college, have a good job, and found Mr. or Mrs. Right? Call, email, or tweet us during this break. 1-877-623-MYIE. 877-623-6943. 10 more minutes with Dr. Mark Rignaris on early marriage. You can email us here in the studio, talkback at issuesetc.org. We're coming to you live this Thursday, August the 20th. Talkback at issuesetc.org. Or Twitter us at issuesetc, at issuesetc. Our guest, Dr. Mark Rignaris, is author of the book Forbidden Fruit. You can purchase this book at our website, issuesetc.org. Click on demand.
Would you like to post your favorite Issues Etc. audio segments on your website or blog? Well, we've made it easy for you. Just go to the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, click the embed green logo, and copy and paste the embed code on your website or blog. It's just like posting a YouTube video. Embed Issues Etc. audio on your website or blog today. We love our on-demand listeners. Old theology, new technology. Issuesetc.org.
Thanks for sending us your email. Having produced Issues Etc. for more than 15 years, I can tell you that we've never received email response like this. Unfortunately, we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. It's available for your questions or comments 24/7, 618-223-8384.
A voice in the wilderness of American evangelicalism, you're listening to Issues Etc.
A rainbow of hope.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
When Andrea Roberts and her husband found out their son, Reese, had Down syndrome, they reacted the way most parents would. They were shocked, full of questions, and grieved the loss of the child they had envisioned. Then they discovered what a blessing a child with Downs can be and decided to help other children. The Roberts determined that God had given Reese to them and them to Reese for a special purpose. With the help of nurses at Northside Hospital in Atlanta, Georgia, the Roberts started Reese's Rainbow in 2004. Listen next time for more on this inspiring ministry.
Are you pro-life? Then visit our website at sba-list.org and discover how you can make a difference. I'm Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. Thanks for taking a stand.
I've been waiting a long time for this moment to come. I'm destined.
Welcome back. We're talking about early marriage. Dr. Mark Rignaris is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Dr. Mark Rignaris is Associate Professor of Sociology at the University of Texas in Austin, author of the book Forbidden Fruit, Sex and Religion in the Lives of American Teenagers. He's also written the latest cover story for Christianity Today magazine titled The Case for Early Marriage. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, talkback at issuesetc.org, or Twitter us at issuesetc, at issuesetc. Catherine in Arkansas writes this: I have two young children, and I've thought about this conundrum a lot. That is, kids enter puberty in their early teens. We tell them to be abstaining, but then we tell them they shouldn't get married until they have their college degrees or later. I don't think that these are fair requirements. My question is, how can we prepare our young children now for an early marriage? How can we be sure that they will be mature enough spiritually, emotionally, to choose a suitable spouse and live in harmony with that person? And how can we prepare them to live in the real world without help from mommy and daddy? Three big questions.
Yeah, right. I wish I had all the answers to that. One thing, a few things that brings to mind. Number one is without help from mom and dad, they will always need your help. They will always need your story, your example, your advice, your ear when they are having difficulties. And another thing that strikes me is that if these are the kinds of questions you're asking now, you're probably in much better shape than the average person who has sort of completely thought of marriage as something that kids should put off until their later 20s. And then all of a sudden, voila, their kids are 22, 23, or 32, or 33. And then now some of these ideas have struck them. So you're in good shape in the sense of you're moving into the heavy socialization years on this subject. But I concur. I went so far in the piece as to say I thought it was unreasonable to expect people to abstain from sex for so long because we've added all these sort of cultural baggage and economic baggage and job and education and college and medical school, all these things onto their list of along with abstinence. And I've taken some flack for that claim, but I do concur with you that that's an awfully tall order we ask of people.
This email comes from JP in Seward, Nebraska. As a college student in a long-term marriage-oriented relationship, 4 years in October, I don't believe that it is best for a college student to get married. The pressures of college life would only be compounded by adding to the pressures of the first years of marriage. I don't believe that the first year in the real world would be any easier than college, but I think it would be a poor life choice to get married at this point in my life. Others may believe differently. Thank you so much for all that you do in proclaiming the Word of God in the context of traditional Orthodox Christianity.
Right. Well, I've not trying to float a categorical imperative where I tell people they need to do this. He has free will and the choice to make about that. And it's the kind of thing you want to discuss, obviously, with his girlfriend. The problem I see in that logic is that there's this expectation that pretty soon, just around the corner, things are going to clear up and life is going to become a lot simpler. And I don't know, I haven't found that bend in the road yet. So part of me says, why don't you walk this path together? And, you know, I have found that being married has been an extremely helpful social support. And as I observe some of my students at UT, some of my graduate students, personally, some of the most successful ones are ones that are married because they have a structure in place and they have a calendar they have to stick to. And the freedoms just aren't there, so they have a lot more focus.
Let's deal with some common objections to early marriage, and I like your response to them. The first one being one we've touched upon here several times, and that is, you know, young people are not as gainfully employable as people who've had the experience, got the degrees, and those kinds of things. What's a good response to the economic insecurity argument?
Right. One thing is, like you pointed out about your parents, a lot of us had pretty humble beginnings, and it wasn't a bad thing at all. In fact, you know, we look back fondly now on those days. We're fairly conservative fiscally because of those days. So I think a little bit of temporary poverty is never a bad thing, and it makes you appreciate sort of where you've come from since then. Some of that sort of economics, you got to decipher between, are you asking sort of, is this going to be real poverty, or is this just going to be, you know, some humble beginnings? So on top of that, too, is, you know, two people combining incomes and sharing expenses can tend to go a lot farther than two people living separately.
Let's deal with the immaturity. You point out in your article that especially young men tend to not only put off marriage, but put off growing up, too.
Yeah.
And it seems a very legitimate concern about the maturity of those who marry.
Sure. Yeah, I'm not going to counsel somebody to marry an immature man, especially a younger immature man. That's sort of like one of the worst possible scenarios for young marriage. Immaturity is not inherently a problem. I mean, a lot of us who married younger will look back and like, we had no idea what we were doing. And yet we were teachable, and we had a sort of a bedrock commitment to the unity of the marriage. Sure, we made some stupid mistakes, said things that we've regretted, gotten crazy fights. But, you know, we matured through that. We learned things, and we went through it together. instead of going through it apart and sort of coming to some sort of maturity as a single and then trying to make it work with an equally mature, independent person. So immaturity can be a big concern, but it need not be if you have the right mindset about what you're doing.
I mean, if I look retrospectively, Dr. Ragnaris, at the level of my maturity, personal maturity, when I was married at 23, I believe, I was an idiot. I mean, in every way possible. A wonder that my wife even put up with me. She probably just had rose-colored glasses on. And I was not mature enough to marry, and yet I did. And by God's grace and by a tremendous amount of help from family and loved ones, 22 years later, we are happily married and have no intention of ever changing that.
Right. There's a beauty to looking back at the early years and saying, you know, we didn't know what we were doing. We acted poorly sometimes toward each other. We had some awful troubles, and yet we had a support system and a social control system that sort of, you know, held our feet to the fire, and they held our hand at the same time. And so those kinds of things are really critical. One of the key predictors of sort of relationships, separation, and also sort of inability to fashion relationships is actually sort of watching people move around the United States and unlearn relationships, learn new ones. And I'm not saying, you know, don't make a cross-the-country move, but as we get more mobile as a society, we learn to become more pragmatic and utilitarian about our relationships. And that doesn't bode well sometimes for marriage. We want to be around friends and around a church and around family that can help us.
A quick email as our time winds down. Timothy in St. Louis says, I'm 21 years old, and I'm deeply committed to a 20-year-old. We are struggling greatly when to be married. We're both in college, living with my parents. I'm unsure that I'd be able to support myself at the moment, let alone both of us.
Right.
And are we failing to trust in the Lord's plan for us by worrying about the money? When we get joined together, we definitely feel ourselves being opened to temptation by not being married.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not knowing all the details of that. To me, that sounds like a marriage in the making, and I would hope his parents, her parents, and them would sort of see this as, you know, an opportunity to help bring together something that's already occurring, and recognize it and support it socially, maybe a little bit economically. I look back, and my father-in-law didn't have too many misgivings about me, even though when I asked for his daughter's hand in marriage, I really didn't have a clear plan of what I was going to do with my life. I think I got engaged when I was 21. And I'm grateful that he saw potential in me, and he didn't have to see actual results just yet. And his confidence in me, I think, has bored itself out.
Finally, with only about 30 seconds, as quick as you can, make the case for early marriage.
First, by early, I want to remind people that I'm not talking about teen marriage. I'm making the case not because it's the answer for everybody or it's the quick fix that we need in the church. I'm making the case because I want people to remember the goodness of the institution of marriage and not to say that, oh, our 20-somethings are for independence and freedom. That's really sending a bad message about what we actually think marriage is about. We don't think marriage is the death of life and happiness and freedom. We think it's actually a birth of something good.
Dr. Mark Ragnaris is Associate Professor of Sociology at the University of Texas in Austin. By the way, Dr. Ragnaris, hook 'em horns.
Thanks.
He's author of the book Forbidden Fruit, Sex and Religion in the Lives of American Teenagers, and he's also written the latest cover story for Christianity Today's magazine titled The Case for Early Marriage. Thank you so much for being our guest.
You're welcome, Todd. Thanks for having me.
We've got a way that you can help promote issues, et cetera, in this ever more connected, socially networked world that we're living in. One way you can help support issues, et cetera, and promote it with your friends who may not know what it's about is send them our promotional YouTube video. We get a number of these things, but the latest is really the greatest, and it's posted at our website, issuesetc.org. Click promote. Find that video, email it to 10 of your friends, and when you do, email us at talkback@issuesetc.org and let us know that you have. We'll enter your name for a drawing for a $100 gift certificate to Concordia Publishing House. We'll hold that drawing live on the air Friday, August the 28th. Thanks for helping us promote Issues Etc. When we come back from this break, Dr. Robert Benny joins us. We're going to get an update from the Churchwide Assembly of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. Stay tuned.
Are you looking for a church where you can receive the gifts of God in the gospel and the sacraments and in the church's historic worship with lively music? Then come to Hope Lutheran Church in South St. Louis. We're located on the corner of Brannan and Neosho Streets at 5218 Neosho. You can also reach us on the World Wide Web at www.hopelutheranstl.org and give us a call at 314-352-0014. There is hope in St. Louis.
These days, value affords me a new attitude. It lets me appreciate that I can start my day with more than a $6 cup of coffee, and that I officially have permission to skip dinner out to spend time talking with my family over Casserole Inn. Concordia Publishing House offers Christian products that help me focus on what matters most. Visit any of the three Concordia bookstores downtown in Kirkwood and on the campus of Concordia Seminary in Clayton, or shop online at cph.org and find out what a new value attitude looks like in your life.
Old theology, new technology. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Historic liturgy, cool. Liturgical dance, not cool. Kneeling for the Lord's body and blood on a Sunday morning, cool. Sitting in your theater-style seat with cup hole if you're a double mocha latte, not cool. We're the Brothers of John the Steadfast. If you're interested in traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice, check us out. www.steadfastlutherans.com.
You are my soul.
When you hear the words new music for your congregation, do you automatically think of mindless praise music? Well, think again. Liturgy Solutions has new compositions for all seasons of the church year that are firmly grounded in the Reformation truths of Christ for us in Word and Sacrament. Check us out on the web at www.liturgysolutions.com. At Liturgy Solutions, we don't do worship, we're deep into liturgy. www.liturgysolutions.com.